Welcome to Mrugashira, a podcast that communicates with communicators. It's brought to you in association with DigiTales. I'm Radha Krishnan. Let's begin.
We are in conversation with Anjana Menon. Anjana runs Content Pixies that creates multi-format content for blue chip companies. She's also an editorial page columnist for the Economic Times. Prior to founding Content Pixies, she worked as an international journalist covering the world's biggest stories for Bloomberg. She anchored primetime television news and was a founder editor of business newspaper Mint. She lives mostly in New Delhi and otherwise in London. Welcome, Anjana, to Mrugashira. I just want to ask you, what's your take on the Twitter India controversy? We recently read reports about, some of the accounts that Government of India wanted being pulled down. And there were also some information about how Twitter wants to, in the second phase, bring in the new labeling for government accounts and, some of the official accounts. And India is not part of that phase two. So I just wanted to understand what's your take on this.
Radha, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. So fundamentally, governments everywhere, whether it is in India or in other parts of the world, because the battle between establishment and Twitter, this is not the first battle between establishment and Twitter or social media, right? The fundamental principle is that you cannot control what others are saying when you have no control over them. So, Twitter with its millions of users, it's very hard for any establishment anywhere in the world to control each and every one of those voices. Twitter itself is, it's grown largely as an unregulated platform, right? Yeah. Even now, there's no regulation over whether it's Twitter or Facebook. The rules that apply to a lot of other traditional media channels don't really apply to them. So it's kind of a culture of the collective and what I call, couch activism of people or couch opinion of people. There's no cost to going on Twitter and saying what you want to, because you don't even know whether that account is real or whether that account is a bot, whether it's a fake account. You can cook up your handle. I mean, just to put things in perspective, Donald Trump, who had, 88 million followers, and he was the first big takedown of Twitter, the high-profile takedown of Twitter. His Twitter handle, for crying out loud, was the real Donald Trump. That means there were other fake Donald Trumps out there, right?
Yeah.
I think that is where the primary problem lies with Twitter, which is identity. And so if you want to control voices or, put a halt to what they're saying, the only way to do that is to go after the social media platform, because it's impossible to go after half a million people and half a million different voices, which is like, Insta coffee. It's there all the time through the day. It's almost impossible to respond to everything. So I think to that extent, what has happened is that governments will try and, go for what they can manage rather than what they can't manage. And that's true everywhere in the world. Your second question was about Twitter saying that it's going to label handles to show that some of these handles are government handles versus non-government actors and so on. Now, again, I'll go back to my first response, which is how do you ensure that establishments anywhere in the world, if they want to persuade people, are only going to use official handles? Hmm. Oftentimes, one of the biggest problems that Twitter faces is that the influence might not be coming from an official handle, because when it comes from the people, it seems like it's more authentic. But there is nothing to say that those voices are not paid voices, or they're not voices that have been influenced by, an official source. So, uh-huh. Face of it, it's a great idea, like Twitter says, that we uphold democracy. And at the end of the day, it's a business. Upholding democracy, that's kind of debatable, because Twitter will serve its interests before it serves other interests. And, it's a private enterprise. Dorsey's amongst, you know, all of these in people who control social media, whether it's Zuckerberg or Dorsey, they're incredibly wealthy, resourceful individuals. And they run a business first. When we assume that Twitter is going to take on great civic and social responsibility, we might be attributing too much to their role.
So do you see this entire regulation of social media by, you know, different countries in different ways? Is this something that is required, or is it something that is adverse to free speech?
Okay, so does social media need to be regulated? I firmly believe the answer is an absolute yes. Should the people who regulate social media be only state actors? Probably no.
Okay.
So, you know, how do you, for a start, part of the problem is this whole thing has evolved in the last decade, right?
Yeah.
It's fast changing. Based on how people behave, the companies are changing their algorithms. Based on the pressure they're under, they're changing their algorithms. So it's not as old as traditional media, which sort of, through a system of hit and trial has some kind of regulation. There is a self-censorship. But here you can't have self-censorship because anyone and everyone can join. People are not going to self-censor and self-regulate. So it is imperative that you should have some sort of regulation, but that should ideally follow some broad principles. A, it should follow a principle of transparency. It should follow a principle of fairness and rule of law, where the same rule applies to everyone. It can't be selective. There must be a due process that's followed. So when there is regulation, that regulation mustn't be arbitrary. That regulation must be transparent to start with, and that regulation must hold up to scrutiny from civic society.
Is it that, you know, only one part of the media universe today is getting targeted, which is the social media, and the rest of them are, left free?
You know, I think the way traditional media is consumed is slightly differently. People over a period of time choose the media that they want to consume. So, you know, for example, in the Indian universe, there are probably readers of, say, Indian Express.
Yeah.
And who are dedicated readers who don't read any other paper. But at the same time, maybe, you know, Times of India has dedicated readers who will not read something else. The same holds true for television. You know, there are people who will watch a particular channel because that is more in sync with their belief system.
Yeah.
And will shun another channel because they feel it lacks neutrality or it lacks the ideology that they support, that the channel isn't supporting the ideology that they personally support. So I think people do make informed choices, and to an extent that choice is also reflected on social media. Yes. If you look at tweets and you look at the way people troll people with a different ideology, and it is eye-wateringly bad.
Yeah.
I think the bigger problem with social media today is that instead of just being a consumer, you're an active participator. So to that extent, you're sitting and trying to shape the discourse from your living room. Whereas with traditional media, you know, you don't get to sort of call the studio and say, I have a response to what the anchor just said. You can at best write a letter to the editor or, write to them. But that is not aired immediately. Social media, the problem is that whatever you say can be aired immediately. Access is for all.
Yeah.
And so it also does vest the ordinary person who has not had a voice with a voice, which is the other side. If that is a balanced voice, then that is a good thing because that means that you're giving everyone a voice. But how do you make sure that it's only going to be a balanced voice? I think that's where the big challenge is.
Yeah, point. Basically, in a way, social media is not letting people be fence sitters, right? I mean, in some way, They have to be on one either side of the fence, and they can't be fence sitters.
You know, you could take a balanced view, but the point is the whole world so polarized now that there is a space for a balanced view? I think this is true across the world. We've seen it, you know, in country after country, whether it's the US where you probably still do, the Republicans versus the Democrats, pro-Trump versus anti-Brexit versus the non-Brexiter, so, you know, Remain versus Leave in the UK. In India, the polarization is more acute, sometimes on, again, with the farmer protests, which is why Twitter is in the news. There are people who are pro the farmer protest. There are people who are anti the farmer protest. And in many ways, for a lot of these companies, and I think people also do forget this and expect probably too much of companies, the way they monetize is by creating this interest and frenzy. The more people who come onto the platform, the better it is for them in terms of their advertising revenue. Okay. So it's not really in their interest to have a completely neutral debate, which is not going to be a raging debate. I'm not here at all suggesting that the companies have, built the structure in such a way or that they're fanning this. Not that. All I'm saying is that the nature of the beast is such that things tend to be very polarized, and the vast majority of us want to raise our hand and say, I'm on this side of the debate and this is who I am. And so the social platform gives them that opportunity.
So, you know, a lot of people in India, particularly some of the politicians and lawmakers, have been trying to promote the Indian platform or the Indian equivalent of Twitter, which is Kuh. And many have started sort of saying that, you know, make in India, and this is a great platform to be on, and let's shun Twitter. So do you see more and more adoption to Kuh?
You know, it's really hard to answer that question, because the answer, I think, with technology is it's very difficult to tell what will take off. When Twitter started, nobody imagined Twitter would be here. You know, when Facebook started, it started as a dinky little app being used by a bunch of people in a dorm. And look at where it is today. So it's very hard to predict how far it will go and how fast it will grow, and whether that's going to be organic growth because people like the usability, like the features it offers, or is there going to be a set of people who say that, you know, this is not, I don't want a platform that is actively promoted by a political class because they feel that, it'll be more skewed and will help and shunt it. On the other hand, there could be people who join in droves to say that I want to oppose that voice.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to tell which way it will go. If it has, like in all technology, like they say, if it has a good user interface, it's easy to use, it's fun to use, it gives the user what they want, it may take off. But, you know, Twitter has grown to where it has after being around for more than a decade. So the size does, you know, to grow to that size does take time.
And also, I guess it's a question of habit, right? I really don't know how many people have actually, you know, completely stopped using WhatsApp. So this is all, some of these things are also habits, right? Which is very difficult to shrug.
Yeah, one is habits. And I think the other thing is need. It's like, if you look at digital payments before and after demonetization, digital payments before and after, COVID, the surges have happened when people have not had a choice. So typically, there is one which is the organic growth. The other is the one that is forced on you because you don't have choice. So it could go either way. If Twitter ceased to operate in India, I'm not sure, and I doubt it, given that people have built ginormous amounts of followers on Twitter, you know, running into 50, 60 million, some even more. So I'm not sure people want to lose followers, you know, including influencers and including people who have a voice on Twitter, some of who are decision makers.
Cool. Let's hope that there are more platforms and there is more discourses online and probably better sense prevails everywhere. Thanks, Anjana. Thanks for your time. It was a pleasure talking to you, and look forward to more such interactions on Mrigashira going forward.
Tune in next week for another episode of Mrigashira. Adios.